I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Let's go there.
With Shira and Ryan.
Entertainment.
Music. Pop culture.
LGBT plus news. Let's go there.
Start now.
What is up? We're back. And can you believe it's 2020?
I wonder
what point will it stop being interesting.
No, I think it stopped now. I don't know why you even said that. I think you just didn't know what else to say.
Do you think 2021 is going to be like a horrible year because 2020 sounded really cool?
No, I don't even think 2020 sounds really cool. I don't know.
How dare you?
I think after the new year is over, you should stop saying Happy New Year. We are already in, New Year and 2020, and it makes no sense for you to continue on, right?
I don't agree.
How long do you think you should continue to say Happy New Year?
I think January.
So what's February 1st hits?
February 1st is Valentine's month.
That's a bit much.
That's happy Valentine's Day.
I think you should have stopped after last week, on honesty.
No.
But I'm not going to lie to you. I have an email that I've sent because I know this is like everyone's first week being back. Yeah. I have been saying Happy New Year, but even me, I'm just like, I don't know if I should even be saying this. Like, just hope you had a great holiday. That's cool. That's fine. But continue to say Happy New Year is just annoying.
The holidays were before the New Year, so if anything, relate to that game.
New Year is a holiday.
Anyway, that said, I've been listening to a lot of these podcasts for the New Year, right? So I've become a bit obsessed with Jay Shetty. And
No one knows who that is. Tell
Shetty,
people who that is.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you for the reminder. Jay Shetty is like the social media star, but also was a monk and turned social media star.
Uh-huh.
So he, is very motivational, inspirational. He went viral on Facebook and everywhere for his videos. And now he has a podcast called On Purpose. And so he does these podcasts about just like helping your life. And then he has guests on. Well, he had this guy, Brendan Burchard, on, who's also this motivational guy. And so they talked about how in order to get your body going, and your mind going, and to be more productive, you need to be moving around and getting up and doing things every 52 minutes. Like, don't sit around for more than 52 minutes.
Oh, so there's a time limit. Okay.
Yeah. So, but right before we went live today, Ryan was making fun of me.
I never make fun of you. Yes, I do.
Because I started hitting myself, but not like, because they tell you to breathe into these exercises, like where you're breathing and then you try to pat yourself down from your like fingers all over your body to get the blood flowing.
So basically, Shira listened to one podcast and they tell her to hit herself and be abusive to herself.
No.
And she's doing it. So I said, Shira, if that same podcast told you to literally poop in your hands and just wipe it all over you, you would probably do it, because guess what? It feels good. Don't you feel rejuvenated after having all that poop on you?
Listen, I will always try things out at least once. And, it's not bad to trust sometimes.
The moral of the story
to go with it
is listen to one podcast and just start hitting yourself. Get
the
all
moral
your
story
energy
is
out.
To believe. Be a believer.
Okay.
Instead of being a skeptic like Ryan. Let's get into so much trending in the news.
Let's do
top
it.
Top of the hour. Okay.
Time to get the show on the road.
Now, some unfortunate news coming out of Puerto Rico this morning. A 6.4 magnitude earthquake and several other strong tremors struck Puerto Rico. Really sad, killing at least one man, injuring several others. A lot of pictures are being shared of a ton of buildings just destroyed.
Well, I think let's preface that what's trending in the news is that's pretty sad.
Downer.
It's pretty much of a downer.
It's important to know that these things are happening.
Yes, but that's a lot of things that are happening in the news. But yeah, it really sucks, especially for Puerto Rico, because I feel like Puerto Rico is probably just now getting out of their rebuild stage from the hurricane that hit.
Yeah.
And it sucks that it feels like everything they probably worked for to rebuild has probably now been destroyed
again.
That's
true.
It's really sad.
Yeah, and it's supposedly the most damaging quake to impact the island since 1918.
I'm still waiting for the big earthquake here. I'm really nervous. I need to move.
I mean, you should be nervous because it's something it could be a possibility.
You were supposed to calm me down. You did a terrible job at that. You just made me even more scared. You should be nervous.
No, you should. Listen, anything can happen at any point, so might as well just enjoy it and slap yourself a bit.
Okay, next.
Puerto Rico declared a state of emergency, though it has not yet asked for FEMA assistance. So it'll be interesting to see Trump's response to everything. Now, U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said today he had secured enough Republican votes to run a Senate impeachment trial without a decision on whether to call additional witnesses. And that was a pretty sudden move against Democrats who sought to negotiate this bipartisan agreement to have former National Security Advisor John Bolton, who spoke out saying he would go on trial if he was subpoenaed, and other White House officials to testify in the trial. So they were trying to get this all together, but he decided to come out before them.
Well, yeah, basically he's saying I can do whatever I want now because I have the votes and I don't need, you know, I don't need any type of witnesses to prove anything wrong. Yep. I can do what I want. So,
I'm not surprised about that.
But
will
it really matter because our whole government's going downhill, especially after this next story that's breaking news, actually?
By the way, yes. And just to let you know, Trump has not yet tweeted about Puerto Rico. He tweeted, though, today about Fox and Friends.
Okay, but has he tweeted about this next thing you're about to bring
no.
up?
No, well, last time he tweeted was 5 hours ago, and this literally just happened before the show. At least 6 rockets so far tonight struck on Al-Asad Air Base, which hosts U.S. troops in Iraq. The U.S. military confirms that an ongoing rocket attack on Al-Asad Air Base, where U.S. troops are based, is happening. It's the one Trump said Iraq would have to pay for if the U.S. leaves. Reports indicate the attack is still ongoing, as I mentioned, and it seems Iran has initiated the first of what is likely to be a series of retaliatory attacks on the U.S., and it's a very dangerous escalation. Iran has claimed responsibility, no word on damage or casualties, and no U.S. response so far.
I think my thing is that is the main point that we're obviously wanting out of this. Are there U.S. troops there? And if there's any casualties, because this is very scary and this is turning into something else, you know?
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, why, according to history, Trump starting a war, which seems to be there's a lot happening, might be his ticket to re-election in 2020. We're getting into that next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
With the killing of a military commander in Iran, and now even today, we're seeing missiles fired at an airbase in Iraq that was housing U.S. troops. It has a lot of us wondering, what is going to happen? Are we heading towards a World War III? And what is Trump's plan in all of this? What's his strategy? And it seems like a lot of decisions are being made, and were made, obviously, with the news last week. It happened out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And now we are where we are. So Richard Green is joining us, political strategist, as we dive into this, because according to history, actually, a U.S. president facing a major foreign policy crisis benefits from at least a short-term bump in public support.
Which was so interesting. I've never thought about this, and I didn't even realize this was a thing. So I'm excited to kind of dive into this conversation because it's kind of scary now that this point has been brought up.
Yeah, and so is this Trump's strategy? He's doing all of this to get reelected. Richard Green, what are your thoughts?
Wow. Yeah, we are right in the middle of an incredibly potentially horrible or heroic moment in history. And I want to remind everybody that the reason this is happening is because Donald Trump undid what Barack Obama and all of our allies did and undid the nuclear agreement with Iran.
Yeah.
As a result of that, everything was off the table. It wasn't kumbaya. It was back to normal. They were going to go ahead and continue with their nuclear development, and we were going to continue with sanctions. We were going to strengthen sanctions. So Donald Trump got what he wanted, and the war hawks like John Bolton and also Benjamin Netanyahu have gotten what they wanted. But look where it's going to go. I do not think, Shira, that this is going to benefit Trump. But it all depends on what happens in the next couple days, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've been watching TV. I'm sure you have the last couple minutes. I mean, the consensus seems to be that if, in fact, Iran has killed even one American citizen in on the base in Iraq, then Trump is going to be forced to respond to that response. And this thing will escalate potentially out of control. It's pretty scary. But
yeah,
another thing I want to remind people is that the Christian evangelical base for Donald Trump is getting what they want as well. They want the end of the world so that Jesus can come back, and we might be right at the beginning of that process.
So no, what you're saying, they want to like kind of strike up the revolution, the revelations in the Bible. They're trying to bring that to term, to fruition.
No, I mean seriously. Listen, I'm Jewish. This whole thing is bizarre to me, but the evangelicals do believe that there will be this massive world war, and the Antichrist will then, you know, rule the world, and then Jesus will come down from the heavens and take over, and there'll be a reign of 100 years of peace where all Christians will be redeemed and taken into heaven. I mean, I'm not making this up.
No, you're not making it up at all.
No, it seems like a theory that makes sense.
No, it's not a theory. It's actually in the Bible. I've been raised around people that really believe that. I mean, at one point, I believe that. I think it's quite interesting. I want to kind of bring it back to the political side of this all, because you said it. You don't think it's going to benefit Trump, but I do wonder, how can this affect the current 2020 Democratic candidates? Because I do think all of this happening, the attention is no longer kind of on the race that is kind of what 2020 is all about.
Well, it is shifting everything. I mean, Joe Biden looks really good here. He was the head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He was vice president. He's got gravitas. He knows a lot of world leaders. He's, you know, been involved with these things. That gives him a lot of extra credibility over someone like Bernie or Pete Buttigieg or Elizabeth Warren. But again, this is so fluid. It really depends what happens in the next 24 to 48 hours.
Wow.
And it could be that Donald Trump is seen as a hero. I don't see how that happens, because he's not if you remember the Cuban Missile Crisis, where John Kennedy and his brother, you know, Robert, ended the possibility of nuclear, you know, war, because they were so smart and so strategic and so, you know, thoughtful. I don't think there's anyone in the Trump White House who has that kind of skill set.
Well, yeah, and looking back at history, George H.W. Bush, you know, it helped him during the 1991 Gulf War. George W. Bush saw his approval surge to record levels after, of course, 9/11.
But the Republican support is quite high. I mean, in a HuffPost poll, 83% of Republicans actually say they approve of this airstrike. So in some way, they do feel like this was a right move by Trump, even though he did not do it in the way that what Democrats are arguing to, in a way that should have been done. It just wasn't done correctly.
If you're playing checkers, it seems like the right move. If you're playing chess, it seems like potentially a horrible move, and that's what we're watching right now. I mean, yes, we all like to see bad guys killed. I mean, we go to movies in order to have that experience, but there are so many consequences, and Iran, I mean, look what happened. There were people in the streets a few days ago protesting against the Iranian government, against them, like wanting more democracy, wanting them to move, you know, in a more progressive way. Now that's been completely reversed, and now they're coming together in a real nationalistic moment, and we have lost an incredible window, and they are a major power. This is not somebody to screw around with.
So just a yes or no answer as we wrap this up. Is this a distraction from his impeachment, and is Trump doing a wag the dog type thing?
It started like that. I think one of the main reasons he chose that option was he thought it would make him look tough. He's already been fundraising off of it. His base loves it.
Okay.
And it would be a distraction. It was wag the dog. It's now evolved far more than that into something God knows what it's going to be.
All right. Well, Richard Green, thank you so much for joining us as we continue to follow this story. Have a great night.
Thanks. We'll all be watching.
Yes,
stay
safe.
Take care.
All right. Richard Green is a political strategist. Now we're moving into pop. Top stories in pop culture. Oh, my God. I am, like,
losing
it.
You got so excited.
I'm like, can we move out of this? Top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea?
Okay, so is your sex life over once you move in with your partner? I don't know. Well, Gwyneth Paltrow thinks so. We're diving into that coming up next.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Welcome back. It's What's the TR, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And honey, I just don't understand this, but apparently when you decide to move in with your partner,
yeah,
the sex stops. It feels like a sexual curse on a relationship. And, you know, I really want to know if it's true because... For me, I can't really clearly judge. I've only lived with one of my partners, mm-hmm. and that obviously didn't go well. And I think it's interesting, you know, about how Gwyneth Paltrow, she was, you know, she basically is doing this article. Well, she was doing a cover story for Harper's Bazaar, and she basically said our sex life between her and her husband, Brad Falchuk, she said is basically done. It's over. Her sex life is finished. Finito.
Well, you know what? You're lucky today, Ryan, because you are sitting in front of someone who's an expert.
In no sex life?
In moving in with people. Oh.
What? Where were you going? Where were you going with that?
Meaning, I've been there. I've moved in with people before.
No, and I get that.
Multiple relationships.
Okay, so before we get into that conversation, let's run down with what Gwyneth Paltrow told Harper's Bazaar.
Of course. It's not about me. It's about Gwyneth.
Right. So Gwyneth, she joked. I think she was joking, but obviously, you know, any story is fun, juicy gossip.
Of course, yes.
Gwyneth said, so our sex life is over. She said, I thought it was really interesting how resonant that was for people. One of my best friends was like, that is my dream. Don't ever move in. And you know, actually, her and her husband, they married at her house in the Hamptons mm-hmm. back in September 2018, but they didn't move in together until that following summer. So they had spent a huge amount of time without, like, kind of living with each other. And, you know, we talked about that a while ago. I remember last year.
Yeah, I remember.
And she said, I think it certainly helps with preserving mystery and also preserving the idea that this person has their own life. So this is something I'm trying to remain aware of now as we are, you know, as we have merged together. And obviously, they both had children from previous marriages, yeah. And so it was very murky.
I kind of think that's why they did it,
yeah.
Because of that integration.
Right.
And let's be clear, not everyone has the privilege to just keep two homes
right.
in
oh,
the same
for sure.
city, right?
For sure. But I think it's quite interesting, this idea that, we're, you know, she says her sex life is over once they moved in, but do you think their sex life was over before that, and then she's just kind of blaming it on that, or did they actually take the time out because they were like, oh, since we're not living together, we do have to actually take the time to say, I need to see you for this relationship to work, and then the sex just came.
I think it's a bit of both. I think that definitely it's known that at the beginning of a relationship, it's hot and heavy, and that doesn't always last, including when you start getting used to each other, and then you move in with each other. We all know it's not going to always stay the same. However, I feel like I sometimes meet people where they go, no, it's just gotten better with time. Like, there are those
That's
anomalies.
I feel like there are those. I feel like if there was... Because if I look back, the big half, the first half of my relationship was actually quite sexually filled. And we were living together from basically the start. And
yeah.
It was hot and heavy. Until the trust issue things happened, that's when it stopped. But I think it can be hot and heavy even more when you're, like, living with your partner because you see them and it's just like, yeah, if you're ever just turned on, there you go. Go have sex.
Well, yeah, but then it just becomes like you're just using them like a toy or something, which can be fun. What I'm saying is you always need to work at it. That's the thing. And people shift in relationship shifts and you need to stay on your feet. You can never get too comfortable with anything.
So because you have all of the experience with, you know, living with someone.
Oh, yes. I'm very proud of that. A lot of move-ins and move-outs.
Yeah, you've lived with how many partners?
I semi-lived with one of my college people. That was one, two,
65,
I think.
Five? Wow,
five.
That's disgusting.
That's a long.
So did you?
And they're like a year and a half, 2.5 years.
So, okay, here's the thing. Would you ever like question yourself to not do it again now that you've had all that clear experience?
No, it's not about sex. It's about just like driving myself crazy. Like I would not move in right away with someone just because of the commitment and how much it takes.
But that all has to do with the sex. It feels like
yeah,
it's all
but like some others we moved in at the sex. It like you could say it changed. It wasn't like that when we just met, but it wasn't like it went off the map, you know, off our radar. What I would say, I'm not going to move in with another person because the move out part and the, you know, the unraveling of a relationship once you move in is so intense that I just want to make sure it's the right thing. Like it's going to be possibly my partner I have a kid with or get married to.
Okay, so
versus just like
you basically learned
we're hanging out.
You've learned from your past mistakes, if you want to call them that.
I don't like saying their mistakes.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, what would you rather call them?
Lessons, gifts. They're life's gifts.
Okay, that's cute. Well, I think
I'm looking at it differently.
Okay.
Shifting perspective.
I like that. The one thing I will say about this article that she was talking about, she did admit that she's very good friends with her exes. Of course, you know, her ex-husband, Chris Martin. Obviously, they share two kids together, so they have to co-parent. And then she even says one of them is one of my best friends, one from high school. His name is Tony Woods. Hmm. And I had no clue that she dated Brad Pitt.
Oh, yeah.
They were
a couple. That was back in the day. Tony Woods, I looked him up. Oh, there's a Tony Woods.
Did you Facebook him? That's the most common name ever, Sharon.
No, I Googled, and it's this comedian.
Okay, well, I got to...
I don't know if that's him.
We'll be right back with more What's the Tea, because apparently, y'all, we're going back to Golden Globes on Sunday. Beyonce, there were some stories that came out that Beyonce was a major diva at the Golden Globes, and actually, I got an exclusive story that someone DM'd me, one of the photographers on the red carpet. They had a problem with her, and I'm going to tell you, and we're going to discuss it coming up next. That's the real tea, honey.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
All righty, we are back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture story of the day. And Shira, can you believe that Beyonce was being a diva at the Golden Globes?
Oh, I'm so surprised.
Oh, you are so disrespectful.
Come on, give me a break. They brought their own champagne there.
Okay, well, duh, that's their champagne.
No, at a certain point, like, it's too much.
That's their champers.
It's too much.
No, I don't, and I think one.
There's something about being humble and grounded. You could still be, like, super famous and praised and a hero.
I'm literally about to be like, Shira, just shut up. Okay, no, let's talk about the story that's coming out.
Let's go at it. 2020. We are debating Beyonce once and for all.
Now offended, and I don't even want to speak to Shira Lazar anymore. But no, here's what happened. So a Page Six spy was stunned to see that basically Beyonce was being led to the bathroom during the Golden Globes by a staffer who had her arm basically jutting out in front of her at, you know, face level to prevent people from taking pictures of or even kind of like staring at Beyonce. So I've seen this happen from Beyonce's bodyguard, Julius, who, you know, when she's like walking in public areas, he'll put his hand up where there's cameras and things like that so people can't get these awful, terrible photos of her. And I totally actually understand that because my thing is, we've seen photos that obviously Beyonce never approved and just kind of came out and they had her looking a mess and like they didn't even try to edit them. Like Facetune is a thing. How dare you? But no, it's interesting that people were upset that she would have someone guide her to the bathroom and then have them put her hand up just because they didn't want her to take a photo of her.
It's like, just too much. Well, there's other celebrities there and you're like, come on, get over yourself.
Well, but she's actually the biggest celebrity in that room.
But you're like,
the celebrities there are fans of hers. So
okay.
I understand if she's just like, I just want to have a moment where I'm like here and I'm enjoying the time and not being bombarded by photos.
But she brings more attention to herself when she does that.
No, but having a staffer come like take her to the bathroom
is not
that big of a deal.
And walking with her and putting your hands like, oh, don't notice that this is happening. You just
the
have someone
walking
around.
The staffer was doing
around.
That. Beyonce wasn't doing that. But I will say this.
You don't think she was given that direction?
I think she was right to do this on the car. Like, I think she was right to do this on, you know, while she was walking inside. Because walking, we've been at the Beverly Hilton. It is a lot going on when there's, like, galas set up and the dinner tables. People are walking everywhere.
Yeah, then don't go to the event if you're going to act like that.
But she was invited by Ellen to be there.
But once again, if you feel like you're going to be uncomfortable and it's going to be difficult to deal with, then don't go.
But that means Beyonce can't be anywhere because...
Well, that's her problem.
You are being a utter word. You are being so terrible.
I just feel like at a certain point, like, I don't, you're a huge celebrity, of
but
course.
But she's also still a human that doesn't want to be attacked by all these, you know, outlets and everything.
But they're going to snap pictures of her from some angle. So she might as well just, I think, let go and just move
okay,
on.
Okay, so I will say this, that I understand the photography thing. But here's something that happened to me. A photographer that was actually at the Golden Globes, everyone was waiting for her to stop by the carpet because they knew Beyonce was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they DM'd me because, you know, I have reliable sources and What's the Tea is exclusive. Mm-hmm. And so there you go. This photographer said, so here is the deal with her yesterday. They asked one of the photographers to wait for her until she arrived, mm-hmm. shoot her, and then give the card to her people to choose photos to choose and then Photoshop. Then they would give the card back with the photos that they wanted to send, like they wanted them to send out. Well, the photographer said, no, they were not going to do that. And so Beyonce was like, okay, then I'm not walking the carpet. So that's the reason why we didn't get any photos on the carpet of her, besides her running a half an hour late. So do you think, because she is the star quality that she is, do you think it is okay for her sometimes to get away with these things?
I think the red carpet thing is different than the inside thing. The inside thing is like, you're there, get over it.
The inside thing is even more important.
No, but like, that's uncontrollable. If you're going to get in that mode, you're going to be not able to just be anywhere and exist.
Yeah.
I think the red carpet is more of a setup. You know those pictures are going to be going everywhere. So if you have your person that you know you deal with and you have an agreement, then do that. Like, I think that makes more sense than like thinking that no one's going to, I don't know, that being around other celebrities, everyone's going to be taking pictures. So you just want to, like, you might as well put a bag over your head.
Well, I feel like Shira's feelings have been hurt by Beyonce and now she's on a
Beyonce, bigger fish to fry. The world is falling apart. Put your energy there.
Are you kidding me? She does that all the time. How about we say the same thing to a lot of the people? Anyway, okay, so because I'm getting offended for Beyonce. I feel the spirit of Beyonce on my neck and she's like, please get offended for me.
She's a god. But I want goddesses to not like overthink like this.
Let us know what you're thinking on LGT show. Hit us up, sound off in the comments because I feel like I'm right and Beyonce was right, except for the whole red carpet thing. Like that was a little annoying. But yeah, sure, you're just being
all
mean.
Right. Coming up, a gay couple's nightmare story involving a surrogate who gave birth to their twin daughters. The story is crazy. Coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, it's time for some what's trending in the news right now. Top of the hour. Trans activist Gavin Grimm has been elected to the national board of the ACLU. Now, Grimm became a national figure while still in high school. He began actually a legal fight for the right to use the boys' restroom at Gloucester High School in Virginia. He started that effort in 2014 while he was still a sophomore in high school, but it wasn't until August of last year that a federal judge finally ruled the Gloucester County School Board in denying Grimm's request had infringed on his 14th Amendment right to equal protection under the Constitution and violated, discriminating against him based on sex, this title that they have. So that's a big deal. And he could not benefit from that ruling when he graduated in 2017, but it did set a legal precedent and direction for the districts in the future. And now he's been elected to the ACLU, which is amazing. Now he's, he used his activism as an early age to move into real work with the system.
I would totally. That's one amazing, and maybe we should reach out to see if we can get him on the show because I think what he's done really needs to be highlighted. And we honestly, this is an early yes queen because we wanted to celebrate his accomplishments, especially for what he's done. And like you said, his activism has been so important for so many people, especially even for himself. And I think it's brilliant. It's incredible.
Yep. Well, let's move on to Judge Judy, who's speaking out about who she's endorsing for president from the Democratic race. And she has opened up about her decision to back Michael Bloomberg, saying there was no other voice for me other than a voice of someone who has experience in governance. She also appeared on ABC's The View. And she's actually never endorsed any presidential candidate up until now. And she said yesterday, actually, that she has never seen Americans so angry with each other as a family. And it became sort of frightening when you couldn't go to a social gathering and have a difference of opinion.
So here's a clip of she actually even went even further and she recorded a video, a commercial, an endorsement commercial for Michael Bloomberg. And here's a clip of that.
I'm Judge Judy Shindlin, and I'm a pretty good judge of character. Mike Bloomberg will be a great president. He's a job creator, a manager, an innovative mayor, and an impactful philanthropist. He'll unite and lead the country. Case closed.
I could see them dating.
Okay, one, ill. I'm not even thinking about that. Two, let's break this down. An NBC-made billionaire is endorsing another billionaire who's probably going to help her save a crap ton of taxes. Oh, that doesn't seem like you know, a conflict of interest.
I mean, do I really trust her endorsement? A lot of fun parties together.
I don't trust her endorsement at all. Michael Bloomberg is just another billionaire, in my opinion. Yes, he has some governance experience, but I just what he's done to black and brown people, in my opinion, I just will never, ever, ever, so, ever be okay for.
Judge Judy will not move the needle for you.
No, and the fact that she's like literally coming out at making this big announcement for it, it's like kind of gross. I'm like, girl, you're a billionaire. Get out of my face.
Wow. Shots were fired.
Period.
All right. Stephen and Mark Winchester Horscraft. This is a married gay couple from England. This story is wild. They launched a crowdfunding campaign to help cover the $34,100 in legal costs after the surrogate mother of their newly born twin girls refused to sign over parental rights unless they paid her an additional $4,000 on top of the $22,300 they'd already paid her to cover her other fees. Now, this is pretty scary because imagine you're ready to, you know, you have a surrogate and they give birth to your twin girls and you can't even get them back because they're asking you to pay more money out of nowhere.
Wow.
So it's a crazy story. Anyway, they've launched this this GoFundMe page, and so you can check it out. It's LGBTQNation.com actually posted about it, so you can go support what they're doing so that they can get their kids back. And so this is like pretty crazy.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
What does pansexuality actually mean? And what's the difference between being a pansexual and a bisexual? Because it seems like these days a lot of people are confused. Of course, we want to go there and get into it. And we're inspired more recently to cover the story because Layla Moran, a Liberal Democrats MP, recently revealed that she identifies as pansexual. You might not know who she is, but she is the first known British politician to openly identify as pansexual. So we're seeing this more and more in the news as more public figures come out and ensure that they are pansexual. Janelle Monáe was also one of them who talked about that. And Bella Thorne, actually, the actress, tried to explain it to the masses on Good Morning America last year. And here she is talking about that.
I'm actually pansexual. And I didn't know that.
Yep. Okay.
And somebody explained to me really thoroughly what that is. And
explain that to me.
You like beings. You like what you like. Doesn't have to be a girl or a guy or, you know, he is she, a they, or this or that. It's literally you like personality. Like, you just like a being.
I mean, I get it. When someone says that, I get it.
No, but I totally get it, too. Yeah. I think what's interesting about the conversations around, obviously, sexual identity and gender identity, those two things end up being conflated. And I think the terminologies and just labels and sometimes can be very overwhelming for people to understand and oftentimes can scare people not into wanting to have the conversations because they're either afraid of, you know, offending someone or they just don't know themselves. And they also may not care because they're like, oh, it doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect, you know. I'm excited to have this conversation because it feels like, yeah, there is a clear, distinct, you know, definition to two of them, to what that means, to pansexuality and bisexuality. But it also, at the end of the day, kind of just means whatever the person wants it to mean, right?
Yeah, I think that's for anything, really.
Right,
well,
right.
Mackenzie Hart is joining us, a GLAAD Media Institute coordinator, to discuss this topic with us. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so why do you think there is such a confusion here and why so many people are talking about this right now?
I think it's because it's been kind of underrepresented, it's been underexplained, and there's been, you know, mixed definitions when it is heard. And there are just so many different anti-bi and anti-pan attitudes that are unfortunately out there that impact the way that kind of everyone sees it. So when people hear these words, they don't necessarily understand them as well as they should because they've been so underrepresented over time.
Yeah, and I know on the website, GLAAD does talk about it and create some sort of definition. Can you explain for people listening? Obviously, there's a lot of people in the community that are listening and they get it, but there might be some people listening that don't know the difference.
Well, I mean, even people within the community do struggle with understanding some of these things. You know, there's so much lack of clarity and misunderstanding. But the way that GLAAD describes bisexuality is that it is the capacity to form enduring physical, romantic, sexual, et cetera, attractions to genders similar to your own and genders unlike your own. And then for pansexuality, the GLAAD definition is similar, but it's The way that we describe it is the capacity to form enduring attractions to any and all genders. Kind of an all genders might apply. It depends on the person.
And I guess the interesting thing, especially when having conversations like this, is obviously people are talking about labels. And I think oftentimes labels can feel, like I said, overwhelming, and people are just like, well, I thought we were wanting to get away from labels. And then people feel actually more comfortable now in the label that they're choosing. So I guess, how can people have these conversations and without kind of offending people and not feeling just overwhelmed from all of this?
Well, the most important thing is to listen to every single person and how they talk about themselves and then talk about them using the terminology that they describe. It's very easy to kind of get caught up in some of the confusion and to feel a little bit overwhelmed because we're finally seeing a lot of these terms represented. But the most important thing is just be respectful. As with kind of anything in life, any relationship you have, it shouldn't be different based just because it's about gender identity or sexual orientation. You should just be respectful of any person that comes your way and describe them the way that they would describe themselves.
I agree.
Yeah, and does it bother you that sometimes these terms become like trends? Like, oh, this is a trend right now, bisexuality. And now it's becoming a trendy word, pansexuality. And how do we move beyond that?
I think that we move beyond it by allowing people to identify however they want and get away from some of the language of trends. And to kind of avoid kind of throwing that kind of judgment at anyone who might be finally safe enough to explore who they are. Sorry for the fire engine in the background.
Hey, it happens.
Who are finally, who are finally safe enough to kind of explore who they are. So I wouldn't worry so much about, you know, the idea of these new words as trends, but instead looking at it as the first time that people are finally being able to not just be seen as who they are, but also to understand themselves as who they are.
So I think the one thing that's very interesting, and I was reading up about kind of the two definitions of these two, something that was brought up to my attention was the kind of trans exclusionary of kind of what some people feel like bisexuality can really mean, because they automatically determine to the binaries of gender.
That is such a common misconception, but the thing is that bisexuality has never been trans exclusionary or non-binary exclusionary. It's always meant the ability to form attraction to genders like your own and genders unlike your own. And then something else that I often point out is that the majority of the trans and gender non-conforming community actually identify as bisexual or somewhere within the bisexual umbrella.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation today. We appreciate it.
And then, of course, go to GLAAD.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Go to GLAAD for all your resources, right?
GLAAD is on social media, @GLAAD. That's it, right?
Yes. And it's spelled GLAAD.
Yes. There you go. We love you guys. Mackenzie Hart is, again, from GLAAD, the GLAAD Media Institute coordinator. Thanks again. Have a great night.
Great. Thanks so much, you guys. You too.
Now, coming up, why millennials are leaving organized religion more than ever before. That's next.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, many people, specifically millennials, are opting out of organized religion. Not surprising, but now it's in a report, Ryan. According to an October report from the Pew Research Center, 76% of the baby boomer generation describe themselves as Christians. But in contrast, only half of millennials identify as Christians. 4 in 10 say they are religiously unaffiliated. Mm-hmm. And 1 in 10 identify with non-Christian faiths. Then let's move on to this other side of spirituality. 3 in 10 adults ages 18 to 49 identify as spiritual, not religious. And then more than 60% of those adults have at least one New Age belief. And a New Age belief could be like astrology.
That is a new age belief. I mean, crystals, sage, all those incense stuff that we all love to do secretly, some non-secretly because Shira. I think it's quite...
I own it.
Yeah, you do own it very well.
No,
but
sure.
I actually identify with this conversation so much because I grew up very religious in organized religion in the South. And to say that I actually have said that I do not believe in organized religion. I consider myself more spiritual, and I do feel like a lot of my friends who are the same age and also grew up in similar situations are now starting to identify in that way.
Well, we've seen it ruin the world. You know, if you look at a lot of our biggest fights, wars, it's religion and it's territory, you know, and oil, you could say. It can get political here. But Professor Diane Winston now joins us, who's a professor of religion and media at the University of Southern California, as we get into this topic. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ryan. Hi, Shira. It's great to be part of your show tonight.
Yeah, well, we find this such an interesting topic. It's very relevant. Why do you think, according to all these studies, that this is all happening?
Oh, gee, there are a lot of reasons why it's happening. The millennial generation has been turned off by the politicization, you know, the way politics has infiltrated American religion. And you can see this with the evangelicals coming out and saying Donald Trump, you know, was appointed by God and God chose him. That's not, you know, that doesn't seem to be the right kind of religious take for young people. Also, young people are better educated and they're more mobile, and those things traditionally make people less religious. And religious institutions have just, you know, had a bad track record in the last 10 years between the pedophile scandals and, you know, religious leaders being caught cheating with other people's wives or husbands, and, you know, money scandals. It just turns people off.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, one of the biggest issues is LGBTQ+, because even young people who are not gay don't like the way many traditional religions treat gays.
No, yeah, yeah. It's quite true. I think oftentimes, you know, religion is supposed to be, is to look at, you know, you're supposed to have a community. You're supposed to form that in some ways. And now with people leaving, it does say, like, we're, you know, younger generations, millennials, Gen Zers, finding that community. Because it, for me, once I stopped going to kind of a church, you know, house or whatever, a sanctuary, I've always felt like that's always going to be a part of who I am because that's how I was raised. But I've always looked into other forms of religion, but it's kind of like, how do you feel that in an effort to reach younger people, should the church, I guess, might need to change views on certain things? And I guess, where do they go from here, kind of bridging that generational gap?
I don't know how churches and synagogues can bridge the generational gap unless they really rethink their message and the way they operate. There are some synagogues and churches that are popular with young people because they're affective. In other words, people feel when they go. It's not a head thing. It's a body thing. And there's lots of music. Music is a really good way to get young people in. And they offer opportunities for social service because a lot of young people are really into doing their religion, so volunteering and helping others. But there are a lot of other ways people express religious feelings, like community and service and belief in something greater.
Yeah, and we're going to take actually a break, and we're going to get into what those things are, the options outside of organized religion, right after this.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
We're talking about how millennials are leaving organized religion and finding community in other ways now, and helping us with that is Professor Diane Winston, who's a professor of religion and media at the University of Southern California. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be talking with you.
Yeah, definitely. And now before the break, we were talking about these other ways that millennials are seeking community and new age practices. So let's get into that. And also, I want to know, like, could that create enough of a backbone for someone to guide their lives? Because I do think there's something to be said when you have some sort of foundation, whether it be in spirituality or otherwise.
Shira, that's a really interesting question. Can you be a good person if you are not religious? And I think From all that I've read, the answer is yes, you can be, because you are also socialized by your family, your schools, your culture. And so I find, at least with my students, many of whom are not affiliated religiously, their moral and ethical structure is just as robust as people who go to church every week. So I do think you can be a good person even if you're not in a religious organization or a religious institution.
I would agree, but I think, like, for me at least, like, I've been venturing into Buddhism, and I do think that, you know, falling back on something that's around compassion and kindness, it helps to have those types of you know, theories in your life, so when you are confused, at least you have something to fall back on.
But I want to be careful with kind of saying that, because you were, you know, we probably have listeners that are atheist.
Oh, and yeah, I just want to say, for me, like, I was just saying,
right.
I found that.
Well, I'm saying, you know, we have listeners that are probably atheist, and they can be great people, they just don't believe in that. But I think what comes up to me is, if, you know, we're less likely to be a part of this kind of spiritual or religious group, are we missing out on that community? Is it because, obviously, even Shira, she has her own community that people that love to talk about Buddhism and just personal growth.
Yeah.
And so I guess if you don't have something that you're connecting with other people, are you kind of missing out on something?
There are lots of ways to connect with other people. And there's a feeling among people who study religion that all kinds of new ways are possible. And these range from yoga classes to CrossFit to SoulCycle and to new experiments. You know, there are millennials who meet for a dinner party where they talk about death and what the impact of death in their family has been. There are millennials who meet and they do social service projects and they don't talk about religion per se. There are groups for folks who are secular humanists or atheists that look like a church but aren't a church, and they stress values and they stress fellowship, but they're not stressing anything supernatural as religion does.
That's how you're making the difference. This distinction is the supernatural.
Yes, I'm making it. Yes, I would say the supernatural is one distinction. But then again, you know, there are, I think Wicca is the fastest growing religion in the country right now.
Oh, and
really? I've read that. And though, feel free to check me.
I love a fact check.
Wicca, it's witchcraft, pagan religion.
Yeah, Wicca is pagan a pagan religion. Yeah.
And, you know, that has a supernatural dimension, but it's an alternative to, you know, quote-unquote normal religions. And I also think popular culture can serve as a religion. I think, you know, people who watched Game of Thrones, for example, they tweeted, they were online, and they were discussing ethical and spiritual issues having to do with that show. Yeah, and so if you are, you know, talking in a community, and it doesn't even have to be in a virtual community, I'm sure there were people who met in real life to talk about it like a book group would. So popular culture is also a place where people get a lot of religious and ethical ideas. I'm teaching a course on it starting next week, so that's in my head.
I was just about to say, I want to take this course.
I
think this is really fascinating. I'm sure the Game of Thrones fans would love that they have a religion. Professor Diane Winston, thanks again for being here with us. And can people follow you on Instagram if they want to find out more, or maybe sign up for your class?
Well, unless they're USC students, they can't sign up for my class.
You can always dream. Okay.
Put that course online.
They're welcome to find me online, get in touch with me, follow me on Instagram or Twitter, where I am Diane Winston at both of them.
All right.
I would go to the church of Diane.
Yeah, you're great. I love you. I would definitely want you as a professor.
Yeah.
All right. thank you again. Now, coming up, we actually have some breaking news, top of the hour. Details are on the latest Iran attacks happening right now, and Jart Hill will be joining us for that.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now we have breaking news in what's trending in the news top of the hour. Iran launched more than a dozen missiles at two Iraqi bases that hold U.S. troops. It appears to be a very obvious retaliation for the American airstrike that killed a top Iranian general last week. The Pentagon is confirming all of this, and Jarrett Hill is with us to break it all down. Of course, you know Jarrett from Drop the Subject with Jarrett and Ellie. Thanks for being here.
Hey there. A lot going on tonight.
Yes, definitely. So what exactly do we know right now? Because I know there's new information that keeps on coming out.
Yeah, so things are ever evolving. We know that this happened around 5:30 Eastern time, 2:30 Pacific time, where the Iranian military fired at least a dozen missiles. We're not exactly clear on how many that went into two different military bases where American troops were being housed or were working. We don't know of any casualties just yet, whether they be Iraqis or U.S. soldiers. There is a conversation online about a number 30, that 30 soldiers have been injured or killed. I just want to be really, really clear. That number is like unsubstantiated within like American media, but it is something that is coming out of Iran, which would suggest that it could be propaganda or it could be a real number. But yeah, as of right now, there's no like confirmed reporting on any American casualties at this moment. It is something that is a direct escalation after President Trump, ordered the airstrike that killed the Iranian general Soleimani. So it's a very hot situation that is ever evolving. And
yeah,
this has only really started to break within the last 40 minutes.
Well, I think it's what's interesting is happening here. I'm reading something that says Nancy Pelosi was discussing the situation in Iran when she was handed a note with the news of the attack. And Representative Dan Kildee said she paused the discussion to tell the members of the steering committee of the news. And then all she did was say, pray. So with news like this happening, I mean, obviously we're all kind of scared. We don't really know what's going to happen next. Do you find this could possibly be very escalating? Like, this could be to go to a place that Trump probably really doesn't understand that it could go to.
Well, I taking off the reporter hat and putting on the more pundit-y kind of hat.
Yeah.
This, I believe, is what Donald Trump wanted, right? Mm. So like when he did this airstrike a few days ago, they had to have known that that Iran would respond in kind. Going back to the reporter hat, if you will, there is reporting that Iran has said that if the United States does not respond to this retaliation, that this will not escalate. However, taking the reporter hat off, there is no evidence to support the idea that Donald Trump would have something like this happen and he decide not to retaliate to reduce any risk of escalation. Donald Trump has done this because he wanted to escalate this situation. Donald Trump has done this because he wants to get us into a war. It is not a coincidence that this is happening literally as his impeachment trial is days away. This is not a coincidence.
Yeah. And that's the thing. We were like, this is basically being used and people's lives are being put on the line for one big distraction ploy. So we're not talking about, you know, this whole impeachment situation. It's very scary.
Exactly. It's scary, but it's also frustrating. And it is something that literally only a president could do. Literally only a president has the power to do something like this that could get us into this kind of a provocation. And this administration has been provoking Iran for years, pulling out of the Iran deal, saying that they were doing things that they, you know, couldn't necessarily substantiate with like facts and data. So like this is something that is escalating very quickly.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised to see, you know, the United States responding within the coming hours or days.
How many missiles were there, if you don't mind me, been reported or not?
The initial reporting said there were 12, about a dozen,
but now
the reporting is saying that there may be more than that. NBC News is calling it in the tens, so that it may be more. We don't have all that information, but we do know it's at least a dozen.
So I guess what's next? Like, he either, you said, responds or doesn't respond, and then it basically could end. But it's not realistic to think that he wouldn't respond.
Yeah, so as far as what's next, there was back and forth coming from various sources that the president was going to address the nation tonight from the White House, which would seemingly be the way that a president would announce that we are more formally going to be attacking another country or seemingly going into war. Important distinction, Congress has to authorize a war under, you know, the major air quotes of what war means. However, the president does have the power to do what's called an AUMF, an authorization of use of military force. So this is something that we're going to continue to see escalate. However, we have heard from the White House that the president will not be addressing the nation tonight, which... not exactly sure what to make of that, but yeah. I would assume that we're probably going to hear from him tomorrow.
Actually, 2 hours ago, CNN's Barbara Starr, she noted, and there's been multiple reports coming out, that that the Pentagon actually shut down early today on what was supposed to be a major snowstorm. And obviously, the Pentagon has probably confirmed and talked about everything now, but that's wild if it's if those reports are true and they've shut down and they went home. Because
they're still probably working from home, right? The Pentagon doesn't like shut down like this.
You just go, you stay in office, right?
Well, yeah, I don't know how that works, but I mean, couldn't then Trump, like, if he doesn't address the nation, it seems like he's still doing whatever he wants, which he did when he originally killed this commander. Could he be just making decisions right now at this point without letting everyone know?
I would imagine that the president is probably, if he's not currently meeting with his Joint Chiefs of Staff and the military, I would imagine he's already had those meetings or is probably in them right now.
All right. Well, Jared Hill, thank you again for giving us all these updates. We appreciate it.
Of course. You guys have a good night.
All right. We'll be back with more after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
A lot of people would do anything for love. But is it? Oh, well, I don't know. When you're in love, you do crazy things.
Actually really confirmed?
I mean, it's just a known thing.
No, I've never done anything crazy. I don't know if there's any study. Love. Maybe I just haven't been in love.
You've never been in love. Okay. Jinx.
But I don't think that...
Or ditto.
But I don't think love should be relied on I have to be... For me to do something crazy for that person or to show my love for that person, I have to do something crazy. Well, that's not, weird.
Love makes you do crazy things.
No, but, I don't agree with that. That's very toxic. God. It's a toxic way of
obviously,
thinking.
But I'm saying over time, it's all every romantic movie is based on it.
You can't say,
novel.
Well, first of all, you can't say, well, obviously, when you were just literally defending, oh, well, people do crazy things for love.
It's true. But well, I'm just saying,
how crazy are you talking?
We're talking about packing up and moving to another country, which there's a whole reality show based on it. It's called 90 Day Fiancé. So this advice column question that we found kind of feels like it's out of that show. And
is that what 90 Day Fiancé is about?
Yes. Well, they meet in some sort of other place and they're from somewhere else, another country, but they want to come to the U.S. And so they have 90 days to get their green card. And it's craziness ensues.
I don't think that's the same thing in this article.
Oh, really?
Because if you're if you're moving to another country for some, I think in any way of like just moving to another state for someone, I would just never do.
Well, I think it's an even bigger deal to move to another country. This person, this woman who's 30 years old asked, and she returned from the stint abroad, the previous year. She lived remote in a developing country where she met a local man and fell in love. They dated for almost 2 years while she was in his country. She didn't tell her immediate family about the relationship because they wouldn't have approved. Which typically happens. You know, it's hard enough to find a man where you live that your family approves of, let alone maybe from another country where there's differences in general, many differences. This man asked me to marry him, she says, about a month before I left the country. He wanted to nail it down. And she says, I never gave him an answer. Since I've been back, we talk every day. I visited him once. We discussed at length him coming to live with me in my country. But I can't bring myself to do the visa paperwork, which would require us getting married. This is where the 90 Day Fiancé reality show comes in.
Oh, I see. I see what
you're saying. He has been saving money with the intention of coming here, but it's not a large sum given the salary where he's from. He's 40 years old, only finished the 9th grade, and doesn't speak the primary language where I live. I'm not sure he could get a job. I'm not ready to support him.
Yikes.
So what does she do? Well, is it worth it, or should she take the leap of faith or end the relationship?
Here's the thing. It seems like she already knows, right?
Isn't it funny? Half the times in these questions, they are saying the answer in the question.
It seems like you already know, and it seems like you want someone to kind of give you like, oh, yeah, you're making the right decision. But my thing is the idea of moving halfway across the country or even across the like going to a different state for someone, like I just would never do. And that's why I don't necessarily feel like long distance relationships are worth it or even working, because doing that and just uprooting your life that you've had for someone else, and then from this point of view, this lady's point of view, where she seems like she's going to have to be the breadwinner out of nowhere, it just feels like, what are you getting out of that besides sorrow and headache? You're like, you're going to be stressed the entire time because you're in a new country, you're in this, like you're first of all, no shade, but it sounds like you're kind of with a bum. Like, it's, I mean, he
so love doesn't conquer all. I guess love can't conquer if the person, what, doesn't have money and can't figure it out.
No, he doesn't have to have money, but it sounded like just a terrible, like all the red
flags. A recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I mean, he was 40. He didn't finish like the ninth grade. He doesn't really speak English. Like, it was all these things where it's just like, okay, the flags are there. And this guy doesn't even sound like someone that you really want to have established, like a stable relationship with. Why are you even acknowledging him? For what?
Because sometimes love makes you blind.
It can make you blind to things that you need to obviously change, but the idea of uprooting your life, no, love can't make me that blind. I would never be Stevie Wonder.
Or maybe, you know, if someone's good in bed.
I'm sorry, still not going to be Stevie Wonder to it. I'm most definitely not going to be blind to it. I'm not going to do that. Nothing can really turn me off of my common sense, and she's seeming like she's losing all.
Well, a lot of people do, because once again, they built a whole reality show franchise off it. And I must say, it's very entertaining, but it's a train wreck.
But would you ever do it?
No, I'm already, I mean, now at this point in my life, one, it would have to be like, I don't think it's about everyone having money for the future, but you want to feel like
stable.
You're aware.
You
yeah, you're
money.
Aware of what everyone is bringing to the table. And that can be hard. That can be very challenging if you feel like you're going to have to, like, you know, keep everything going. Well, right? Because he can't even survive in this country, possibly.
What if a guy told you, said, hey, I live in Montreal. I live
That's
back
where
at
I'm
home.
From.
Yeah,
okay.
Where you're from. I would really love if you came back here so we can start our family and blah, blah, blah.
I've thought of it, actually, because in the past I wouldn't have done it. I feel like I'm more open, possibly. Like, I would do maybe the radio show for Montreal.
No. But you already know that's not a possibility. You've tried.
Who knows what we could make happen?
Shira,
you know what?
No.
If there's a good enough man, what if Trudeau called me up and goes, I'm in love with you, Shira. Justin Trudeau.
How about we just end it there?
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, if you were debating on whether you're ready to move in for your love, and this is kind of coming off of our last subject of
thinking Justin Trudeau is going to propose to her and want her to move to Canada for her.
I don't know, and he's not even like a
married
good. Yeah, I know exactly.
It was kind of children.
It was a crazy statement.
Yeah.
That I regret.
I'm glad you come back. You come back to
you
reality.
Know before, of course, those. pictures you won't talk about were released. I actually
the blackface ones.
I thought he was a very good catch, and he still is. I mean, he's friends with Obama, so I want to do a double date with Obama and Michelle.
He'll be wearing his special blackface.
No, I don't think that's gonna happen. All right, so here are six signs you're not ready to move for love, according to therapists. These aren't our opinions, by the way. These are expert opinions.
Okay.
You believe moving will solve your relationship problems. Yeah. Don't do it. No, nothing can solve a problem. Like, no kid or moving can solve.
But why? What was your reason to move in with your partners in general?
Sometimes, and it was circumstantial. A lot of people, you know, your lease is running up, and you're like, you already hang out all the time. What's the point?
But how long were y'all together before moving?
Not a short amount of time. It was always like a year and a year.
Oh, okay.
One of them, I think it was 6 months or so.
Oh, 6 months.
It could
have
been like eight months. It was getting on to the year, but yeah, it wasn't as long. That was one of them.
Okay, so you
didn't were long. The others were like, we were together a year and a half.
But do you even think moving in for financial reasons is a bad idea?
Probably. I mean, unless you're sure this is a person you want to get married to and have a kid with. If you're not and you're just doing it, it's probably going to be a
problem. How do you know that 6 months in?
You know, a lot of people say you don't know. I mean, you know when you know.
That's a crock of crap.
I don't know. But then it happens. And they're like, you know when they said that? I didn't believe it. And then
no, they're in the honeymoon stage when they're saying that. I don't believe that.
I hear this time in and time out and over again. But no, but I do hear that, although I wouldn't recommend necessarily moving in.
Do you
in
that want
way,
that moment for yourself?
I think I kind of romanticize about it and idealize
That's
about
disgusting.
It.
Why?
You're
not a Disney
Why not
princess.
Believe? How dare
That's you? Not realistic. The idea of being like, I just knew what
Listen,
I knew.
I'm practical, but I also want a little romance, okay?
You can have romance without that, and I think it's more practical.
A little, why not think I have a little Disney princess magic
but
in
don't
there?
You love the idea of, like, having that moment where it's like, yeah, you didn't even see it coming. You didn't even see that this person next to you was the love of your life, and then it comes out of nowhere. That just makes
it
much better.
I think that when they say, when you know, it could happen at love at first sight, or it could happen in that moment, that blink of an eye, in a moment you didn't even realize, like you just mentioned.
There's no such thing as love at first sight. I don't believe it.
Oh, my God. This is like the skeptic, negative love podcast. I'm sorry. If you came from Jay Shetty or any sort of like very motivational podcast, about your manifestations in 2020, how anything is possible, and then you ended up landing here where we tell you how nothing exists.
Wait, basically, yeah, we're all doomed. I mean, have you watched the news lately?
Yeah, from that to religion doesn't exist, love doesn't exist. Why are we all even here?
I think that's the name of today's show is nothing exists.
We're all doomed. Okay, producer Vanessa, take note. I know she's listening. All right, we've got our Yaz Queen. There's more that I was going to go through, but I think I'll end.
It's fine.
Yaz Queen of the Day coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, it's time for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yaz Queen.
We need a little distraction from all this craziness happening.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, let's talk about Bonnaroo, shall we? Lizzo, Miley Cyrus, and Lana Del Rey are performing. It was announced at Bonnaroo 2020.
I'm actually more so excited about the Bonnaroo lineup than I am the Coachella lineup. That's when Lizzo is killing it, and I'm super excited to see. I would love to go back to my roots back at home to see her at Bonnaroo, but that's probably not going to happen because Bonnaroo is dirty.
I've been there once.
Oh, it is.
It
nasty.
Is, but it was kind of fun because you do feel like you're in the middle of nowhere.
Nah, I don't. I have been there plenty of times, and I do not. I didn't like it. I don't like it.
And also, lineup January 2020. I'm looking for the other. There was another lightning in a bottle lineup. No, that's not here yet. Bonnaroo. Let's talk about Bonnaroo. It's making history.
That's literally what.
Well, I thought there was another lineup that just came out too, so I was looking it up, but it's not there yet. So the reason why this gets also our Yaz Queen of the Day is because Lizzo's actually the first female act to headline the Bonnaroo Music and Arts Festival this June.
Oh, wow. There's been no women at all?
The first female act to headline.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
I mean, I thought it was interesting when Beyonce was the first woman to headline. Our first black woman, like woman of color.
To headline what? To
Coachella.
Coachella.
Yeah. I don't think she's ever done Bonnaroo.
No, I can't necessarily. I would like to see her get.
First of all, the stages are the same. Are you
kidding
me? No,
it's dirtier, you said.
No, it's dirty for the people that are there.
But you know,
it's not dirty for the artists. They're going to be very well taken care of. They're not going to be propped up in the propped up showers that are disgusting out there.
Although I would love to see Beyonce and Jay-Z camping.
No, they probably have, but they call it glamping.
I know.
And they camp on their yacht.
Exactly.
In the middle of the ocean. The Pacific.
the coast of France. No, actually, I saw Elton John at Bonnaroo once, and I cried to Tiny Dancer like I've never cried before.
That is really sad.
Also, another Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yeah. Yes, queen.
Goes to one of your favorites. We move from Beyonce to pop superstar Taylor Swift. And someone amazing, writer, producer, director Janet Mock, who are both named recipients of GLAAD's highest profile awards. And those are, Swift is getting GLAAD's 2020 Vanguard Award, and Mock is getting the organization's Stephen F. Kolzak Award at the LA ceremony on April 16th.
You said Janet Mock, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm more so excited about Janet Mock.
I know.
She's absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. I did not, you know, we love GLAAD. GLAAD was actually featured on the show today. We had someone, a representative from GLAAD, join us, Mackenzie. And I saw the description when they announced it saying, like, in the climate or whatever, the political climate that we are in, Taylor Swift makes us blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, okay, that's good. I'm happy someone's getting honored because they have to pick someone, right?
An ally. Yeah, is this, they have to pick an ally?
Yeah, Beyonce got it last year.
Okay.
So I guess Taylor Swift's getting it this year?
I feel like Swift's, whoever her PR is doing a really good job this year because I feel like she is everywhere. And obviously she has an album out, that's why, but literally, she gets every award. Is this the, she gets every, end of her career award where it's like of the decade.
So are you saying it's the end of her career?
I mean, it feels like some of her awards that she gets, you would get like
Taylor Swift is
after
retiring.
After the fact, you know, like right before you retire.
I mean, to be honest, she can only go with this kid act so much, you know? She's not only going to be so young for a minute.
So her next chapter is upon us.
Maybe. We'll see.
All right, so...
We really just kind of crapped all over her, yes,
please. No. I think it's a great thing.
It makes sense for me to do it. It's just totally left field out for you.
No, it's not. I'm just sitting here loving everyone up. I'm just saying things that are popping up in my mind.
Well, that's our yes, queen. What's coming up on tomorrow's show?
Coming up on tomorrow's show, we are getting into these Facebook ads that have popped up for Trump praising him after killing the Iranian general. Interesting. And it's interesting that Facebook is allowing those to be approved. Plus, can an introvert just choose to become an extrovert?
Ooh.
Can you be both?
I love the definitions. We're going to dive into which one's which. Can you be both? I think I'm both, actually. So
yes, you can.
Yeah.
You know, here at Let's Go There, we always explore all of our humanness.
Yeah, I love that.
All right. And you can listen to our show as a podcast, by the way. We post all our shows on our site. We are channelq.com. And, of course, where podcasts are available. We are sending you love and light.
And, honey, remember this light.
See you tomorrow again, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q.